Welcome to the Guiding Lights. And I'm going to be sharing from the spiritual teaching of Ramana Maharshi. Normally, I play a song first, but I'm not going to do that tonight because we have a very special setup here that I don't want to mess with. So instead of a song, why don't we just have a few seconds of silence? Amen. Thank you very much. So tonight I am going to begin on page 85. Is that correct? Or is it 84? Yeah, 85. 85, I have a little dot. At the top of the page, the name of this section is the Yanani and the World. The Yanani being the enlightened one. And we're going to start with the first devotee question at the top of the page. If the enlightened one and the unenlightened one perceive the world in like manner, where is the difference between them? And we have a very long answer from Ramana Maharshi. Seeing the world, the enlightened one sees the true self, which is the substratum of all that is seen. The unenlightened one, whether he sees the world or not, is ignorant of his true being, the self. Take the instance of moving pictures on the screen in the cinema show. What is there in front of you before the play begins? Merely the screen. On that screen, you see the entire show, and for all appearances, the pictures are real. But go and try to take hold of them. What do you take hold of? Merely the screen on which the pictures appeared so real. After the play, when the pictures disappear, what remains? The screen again. So, with the true self, that alone exists. The pictures come and go. If you hold on to the self, you will not be deceived by the appearance of the pictures. Nor does it matter at all if the pictures appear or disappear. Ignoring the self, the unenlightened one thinks the world is real. Just as ignoring the screen, he sees merely the pictures as if they existed apart from it. If one knows that without the seer, there is nothing to be seen, just as there are no pictures without the screen, one is not deluded. I'll read that sentence again. If one knows that without the seer, there is nothing to be seen, just as there are no pictures without the screen, one is not deluded. The enlightened one knows that the screen, the pictures, and the sight thereof are but the self. With the pictures, the self is in its manifest form. Without the pictures, it remains in the unmanifest form. I'm going to read that again. With the pictures, the self is in its manifest form. Without the pictures, it remains in the unmanifest form. To the enlightened one, it is quite immaterial if the self is in one form or the other. I'm going to read that sentence again. To the enlightened one, It is quite immaterial if the self is in one form or the other. He is always the self. But the unenlightened one, seeing the enlightened one active, gets confounded. You know, I'm reminded of Thich Nhat Hanh using the example of a leaf. Thich Nhat Hanh said, it matters not to the leaf, whether it's on the tree, you know, and green and attached and what we would call alive, or whether it's turning yellow and brown and falling from the tree, what we would call dead. He says it doesn't matter at all to the leaf. What happens with the ego is that the ego is attached to manifest form. Therefore, the ego has a preference. The ego likes this thing, the body, to live. It has a preference. It's kind of interesting because, you know, when people get sick, and I'm going to use spiritual people particularly as an example now. Well, all people want it healed, but spiritual people like the spiritual healings the best. You know, it's fun to get healed by a doctor. It's better than being sick, but getting spiritually healed, that's what we really like. But do you hear the preference in that? Right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, what Ramana Maharshi is saying is that preference that we have for physical healings. And I remember one woman once, you know, getting pretty irate. And she said, you know, if you can't raise the dead, then I'm not listening to you. Again, there's a preference for form. Right? There's a preference for form. If we want the dead raised, we have a preference for form. If we want mystical healings, we have a preference for form. I have heard people talk about if you heal the mind, you should be able to live forever, referring to the body. And even pointing out stories about yogis that have supposedly lived for 750 years, which I don't know if these stories are true or not, but it's irrelevant. That's the point. It's irrelevant to the enlightened one. Because to the enlightened one, there is no difference between the manifest form and the unmanifest form. They are the same self. So those of us who have a preference for the body, wanting the body to live and wanting the body to be well, et cetera, what that really means is that we're attached to form, which means we're coming from the ego perspective. With the pictures, the self is in its manifest form. With this body, the self is in its manifest form. Without the pictures, it remains in the unmanifest form. You know, we talked about my friend Paula this morning, who was hit by a cement truck last Friday, and Dawn did a beautiful job after the weekly gathering of talking about how, you know, she's just not in the manifest form anymore, right? The self, it's still the same self. A moment ago, the self was in the manifest form of Paula riding a bike, you know, in Boston, and then there came a cement truck, and then the next moment, the manifest form it's unmanifest. It's an unmanifest form, and the body, as a result, begins to disintegrate, right? Slowly, but it begins to disintegrate. With the pictures, the self is in its manifest form. Without the pictures, it remains in the unmanifest form. To the enlightened one, it is quite immaterial if the self is in one form or the other. Right? To the enlightened one is quite immaterial, which again means when we have these preferences, that's evidence that we are not enlightened. Eckhart Tolle once said, the ego is attachment to form. It's also interesting to watch Ramana Maharshi, or actually read stories about him. You know, he had sarcoma. And when you read the stories about Ramana Maharshi, you know, he did not care at all if they did anything about the sarcoma. Not that he was looking toward a miraculous healing. He didn't care at all if the body died. You know, it was his devotees that went and got a doctor, and then he surrendered to their operation, and they tried to cut out the sarcoma, but then it came back. And as it spread throughout his body, he wasn't at all concerned. In fact, I remember one story about, it seems like one of the devotees wrote him a letter, and in the letter asked him to heal himself. And his response to that letter was laughing. And jokingly he said, you know, if I heal myself, you're going to want me to live another 100 years and then another 100 years, you know. In other words, he understood that what they had, what his devotees had, that he did not have, was an attachment to form. I don't know if you guys know the story about his death. It's really quite a beautiful story. They say that in the moment that Ramana Maharshi died, there was a star or an asteroid or something that went across the sky in that exact moment that was seen all over India. You know, it's a great symbol of moving from the manifest to the unmanifest form, but no loss of life. One amazing thing that happened to me not too long ago, I think some of you know that I put my dog down, Jamie, on August 23rd of this year. And after I put Jamie down, I decided to go for a walk. And I went out to the lake out by the river, near the lake where she and I walked a lot. And I started walking. And, you know, I had just put my dog down. So, you know, there was some sadness here. I mean, you know, I liked my dog. I still do. I love my dog. But what was amazing was I had just put my dog down. I had just watched the body relax as the life went out of it, right? And when I was walking along that river, all I could find anywhere was life. I couldn't find the lack of life that one believes in with death, right? Like, there was no lack of life anywhere. There was only the fullness of life. There were grasshoppers. There were squirrels. There was the wind. There was the trees blowing. There were little lizards on the sidewalk. The feeling of life was so big. Death is nothing. Now, what people want to believe, like let's say that you love Regina a lot. Well, then what people want to believe is that somehow Regina is going to last forever. That's attachment to form. Regina's not going to last forever, nor is anyone hearing this. But life lasts forever. And you see, what Ramana Maharshi sees and what other enlightened people see when they look is they see life. And life can't end. If you don't believe me, how many people here know someone or at least a pet that has died? Has anybody never known somebody that, and yet, do you see any lack of life here right now? Life doesn't end. So the ego is the attachment to the specific form, but the enlightened one looks beyond the specific form to the life awareness that never, ever ends. And so the original question was, if the enlightened one and the unenlightened one perceive the world in like manner, meaning we both see people walking around, we both see mountains, we both see deer, you know, he says, then where's the difference between them? And the difference between them is that the enlightened one sees life in a temporary manifest form, where the unenlightened one sees form, right, and thinks that somehow life is temporarily in it. Again, the enlightened one sees life appearing as a temporary manifest form. Life is first. An enlightened one sees life appearing as a temporary manifest form. The unenlightened one sees form and thinks that life is temporarily in it, and that death is the end of life. Which again, if you look with your eyes wide open, you can't find the end of life anywhere. Even when you're standing at a funeral crying, there's a whole lot of life standing around beside you crying with you. You can't find the end of life, but you can find the end of form. The devotee says, "It is just that point that prompted me to put my first question, whether one who has realized the self perceives the world as we do. And if he does, I should like to know how Sri Bhagavan felt about the mysterious disappearance of the photo yesterday." Apparently there was an incident at the ashram. A photo disappeared. We don't know anything about that, but let's find out what it says. First of all, it says smiling in parentheses. So I don't know how she was smiling when he answered this. He said, "You are referring to the photo of the Madhura temple. A few minutes earlier, it was passing through the hands of the visitors who looked at it in turn. Evidently, it was mislaid among the pages of some book or other that they were consulting." The devotee says, "Yes, it was that incident. How does Bhagavan view it? There was an anxious search for the photo, which in the end could not be found. How does Bhagavan view the mysterious disappearance of the photo just at the moment when it was wanted?" Ramana Maharshi says, "Suppose you dream that you are taking me to your distant country, Poland. You wake up and ask me, 'I dreamt so-and-so. Did you also have some dream or know in some other way that I was taking you to Poland?' What significance will you attach to such an inquiry?" The devotee says, "But with regard to the missing photo, the whole incident took place in front of Sri Bhagavan." Ramana Maharshi says, "The seeing of the photo, its disappearance, as well as your present inquiry, are all mere workings of mind. There is a story in the Puranas which illustrates the point. When Sita was missing from the forest hermitage, Rama went about in search of her, wailing, 'Oh, Sita, Sita.' It is said that Parvati," and this next one's really long, so I'll do my best. "It is said that Parvati and Paramshrava saw from above what was taking place in the forest. Parvati expressed her surprise to Shiva and said, 'You praised Rama as the perfect being. See how he behaves and grieves at the loss of Sita?' Shiva replied, 'If you are skeptical about Rama's perfection, then put him to the test yourself. Through your Maya, transform yourself into the likeness of Sita and appear for him.' Parvati did so. She appeared before Rama in the very likeness of Sita. But to her astonishment, Rama ignored her presence and went on as before, calling out, 'Oh, Sita! Oh, Sita!' as if he were blind." The devotee says, "I am unable to grasp the moral of the story." Ramana says, "If Rama were really searching for the bodily presence of Sita, he would have recognized the person who was standing in front of him as the Sita he had lost. But no, the missing Sita was just as unreal as the Sita that appeared before his eyes. Rama was not really blind, but to Rama, the enlightened one, the prior being of Sita in the hermitage, her disappearance, his consequent search for her, as well as the actual presence of Parvati in the guise of Sita, were all equally unreal. Do you now understand how the missing photo was viewed? The devotee says, I cannot say it is at all clear to me. Is the world that is seen, felt, and sensed by us in so many ways something like a dream, an illusion? Ramana Maharshi says, there is no alternative for you but to accept the world as unreal if you are seeking the truth and the truth alone. I'll read that sentence again. There is no alternative for you but to accept the world as unreal if you are seeking the truth and the truth alone. And one thing that's interesting about that sentence to me is that in NTI Matthew, which it was my first formal scribal work, and NTI Matthew is the beginning of it, right? In NTI Matthew, I was told the exact same thing. I was told that I had to accept the world as unreal. And if we just look back at the weekly gathering I led this morning, we can see very quickly why that's true. If I perceive the world as real and I perceive its problems as mattering, my attention is always going to be out, 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 away from self. I cannot find self by looking out, out, out. Therefore, I have to have the willingness to disregard the world as meaningless, as not mattering, and close my eyes and focus my attention in, right? And I won't do that as long as I continue to see the world as real. So again, Ramana Maharshi says, there is no alternative for you but to accept the world as unreal if you are seeking the truth and the truth alone. And again, the devotee says, why so? Ramana Maharshi says, for the simple reason that unless you give up the idea that the world is real, your mind will always be after it. If you take the appearance to be real, you will never know the capital R real itself. Although it is the capital R real alone that exists. Again, if you take the appearance to be real, you will never know the real itself, although it is the real alone that exists. This point is illustrated by the analogy of the snake and the rope. As long as you see the snake, you cannot see the rope as such. The non-existent snake becomes real to you, while the real rope seems wholly non-existent as such. The devotee says, it is easy to accept tentatively that the world is not ultimately real, but it is hard to have the conviction that it is really unreal. Ramana Maharshi says, even so is your dream world while you are dreaming. So long as the dream lasts, everything you see and feel therein is real. Santa Claus is here.
Hey, Santa.
Merry Christmas!
Hey, Santa. Oh, my God.
I'm almost done, John Mark. Okay, wow. So again, the devotee says, it's easy to accept tentatively, and I think a lot of people can probably identify with this. It's easy to accept tentatively that the world is not ultimately real, but it's hard to have the conviction that it is really unreal. And Ramana says, even so is your dream world real while you are dreaming. So long as the dream lasts, everything you see and feel therein is real. And The devotee then asks, is then the world nothing better than a dream? But we get into another really long answer from Ramana Maharshi, so that's where I'm going to stop for today. But again, the point that Ramana is making is, unless you are willing to accept that the world is not real, you will continue to be outward focused on the world, and you won't seek inward towards the self. And so it's a matter of where your attention is going. That's why it's important. It's a matter of where your attention is going. Your attention is either going away from the self, or your attention is going toward the self. And so you need to see the world as unreal, as meaningless, as not important, so that you can close your eyes and go within and seek that which matters. All right, that's it.